there's a favorite hole that I have in front of Cave Camp. And last summer, I went down there and fished it in the morning before anybody got out of bed. And nothing. And I know there's fish in it because we had caught fish the day before. And then, you know, went back up to camp, had coffee, came back down 11 and caught four or five fish. You know, they're just there all of a sudden. And then the other lesson I learned was again last year on the same river where Mel was fishing. And there, you could see these huge cutthroat trout in the slow-moving run up against a cliff. And I tried a few casts and nothing. Couldn't get them to move. But Mel just was dogged about it. She was just determined. She cast. And then slowly, they all of a sudden, one started to move towards her fly, but didn't commit. And then she cast again. It moved a little further. It didn't commit. And then finally, it just swooped up and grabbed her fly, and she caught this massive cutthroat. There could be fish right there, is my point. Just because we're not catching them doesn't mean they're not there. I think it, up at the Kathleen, they weren't there. Because we could see them, you know, if they were. But here, some, you know, in that darker water that's really deep out there, you probably wouldn't see them. I don't know.
This is the Food Afield podcast, a show about wild food ingredients and how to collect them. And now, broadcasting from the wilds of Alberta, is your host, John David Schneider.
Put it in that pool right in front of you. Leave it. There, you're on.
Yay!
Aaron!
Yes.
Woo! We did it! I'm a hot mess though. Like, so tangled. I don't have the dance down. Oh, they're so beautiful.
Hey, some success.
Yeah, nice.
Renewed confidence, excitement, vindication. We just had to find spring. Man, there's such beautiful fish, and they're so much bigger than at home. Like, I knew that, but it still kind of came as a surprise, handling them. Like, we've got some girth to them. They're amazing and feisty. Super fun to catch. Thought we might throw in some dry flies, because we saw a few rise, but I don't know, they didn't go for those, so just popped on a little nymph, just fishing a couple feet under the surface, and yet a couple of casts and they're nailing them, so pretty exciting. And this looks like a beautiful creek to explore with a lot of other holes like this one, so it's going to be a fun couple days.
I'm so happy for you. Good.
Enjoying these fish tacos, John.
We're all high-fiving because that was a pretty cool win.
We had our first day of grayling success after a couple days of searching them out in higher country and cooler weather. We finally found spring and found grayling and filled our quota, our frying pan, our bellies, doing fish tacos over the fire.
How did it feel, your first Yukon grayling?
Amazing.
Your first grayling of size, too.
First grayling of size, yeah. Amazing. And they were in quick succession, so it was just like, go, go, go.
It was awesome. It was funny. We we pulled up to this spot. This is a spot that Alex was sort of saving for the last. Not because he thought it would be the best place, but just because that was always the plan. Like 2 years ago, this was the same plan, right?
Absolutely.
End up here. So we pulled in this afternoon. We got out of the north country that was still in winter. And as we drove further south in the Yukon, we just got further and further into spring, hey?
When we pulled up, we kind of had the disheartening feeling that someone was there. But they were actually packing up. So that was kind of sweet, and we chatted with him real quick, and Buddy said he was landing fish, and I could tell right away just by the level of the water that I knew they'd be in here. And so we went up on the bridge and spotted them right away. And then one thing led to another. We got pretty ramped up to get a fly out there, but Erin was taking her sweet time.
We were waiting.
Oh, yeah.
What are you doing over there?
I could not
There's
wait.
Grayling in the stream. They're right here.
There was a little bit of pressure. I was having performance anxiety.
Well, and we both wanted Erin to land the first fish, so.
Yeah, and she
did.
Yeah,
it was pretty special.
I did not want to let you guys down.
She landed the most fish,
oh,
by
you,
far.
Oh, you landed the first fish.
Yeah, you did.
Oh, true.
That's right.
She hooked on the first
fish. Because we thought, we saw them rising. We thought, maybe let's just hook on a dry fly.
But I just say it was like, okay, there's grayling in there. Get ready. Get down there. And then I get down there and like, one of you's on the bridge. One of you's on the bank. You're like, they're over here. Cast right at me. Cast over here. No, they're right there. Okay, they're coming. No, they're going.
No. Like, we didn't sound like that.
No. No, we didn't.
No, it was just super exciting. Like, we were all pretty amped to make it happen after a couple days. And you could see them swimming all around. So it's like we knew it was a matter of time. And yeah, we were all jazzed.
It was your second cast, hey, Alex? That you hooked into that one? Second or third, something like
second
that?
Second cast.
Mm-hmm. And then it didn't take long for Erin to take over.
Mm-hmm.
She pulled the heaviest load. So how many did we catch today? We counted it up earlier.
Oh, well, Erin and I both kept two. And then Erin released three on top of that. Mm-hmm. And I released one on top of that. So I think we're at like seven or eight, and never mind how many we missed and
bunch
lost.
That
and
spit the hook out or had them halfway in the net.
And for the record, I caught none, hooked none, had zero strikes, and am eating your grayling for supper tonight. So thanks, guys. I appreciate it.
You're welcome.
It's nice to be fed once in a while.
And cool then, how you and I discussed this morning, hey, like how we put in all this work and the one thing that would really seal the deal on this trip being phenomenal was us catching fish tonight.
Oh, right.
And it happened just like that.
Imagine if we just were, Alex and I were talking, Erin, when you were in the trailer, we were saying, imagine if we had come here first.
Hmm.
What a disaster that would have been.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I wonder if we would have stuck a couple days or if we would have just been like, fish are
everywhere.
They're hot. Let's go the other places. Yeah.
Yeah. And then we would have spent the next 4 days getting our
That's
asses
gone. That's so true.
I'm glad it panned out like this.
Mm-hmm.
So what are we eating tonight? Let's talk about this a little bit.
We whipped up the grayling right on the fire there. Wrapped them up in tin foil with a bit of butter and taco seasoning. Let those cook while Erin prepared a homemade guac and some freshly shredded cabbage. So we whipped that all up together for these amazing fish tacos.
Grayling tacos, streamside.
Grayling
stream
tacos.
To table.
I guess we should probably mention that we're like, 15 yards from where we caught these fish. Like,
yep.
And they're still rising.
Yeah, we're watching the river, the stream. What is this?
It's a river, believe it or not.
Yeah?
Oh.
Yeah.
We're watching this tiny little river flow past us. There's a steampunk iron bridge covered in graffiti not far from us, but we're in the middle of the dark boreal forest, and this stream flowing through has Erin and I thinking of home, because it certainly looks like a lot of the creeks that we've fished
for sure
in our past. Hey, Erin?
Yeah,
this looks like home. But what I find interesting, you know what I noticed the most about this place, is why is this grass grazed so short? It's like we're in a pasture. Like, why is that? Deer?
That's a good question. I have no idea.
Anyways. I was hoping somebody had some... That was boring radio. And there's a grayling rice right there. So, nice. I will catch a grayling in the Yukon. I'm putting that pressure on myself that tomorrow I will catch a grayling at some point in time. So I'm looking forward to that. And overall, this trip has been a win just based on everything, you know. We talked about this. We were trying to keep our spirits up, I feel like, over the last 3 days. And it was not that hard, actually, because we were in these places that were just breathtaking. We've made the comments. It's like a postcard. It's like a painting. You know, we're in the Yukon in the far north, Canada's Arctic, and it's just surreal. These towering mountains, like mountains so high and jagged that, you know, I've never seen mountains like that before. And then to come down into this low spot, which reminds us a little more like home, is been neat, hey?
Mm-hmm. Like, I feel like our spirits weren't like, we weren't really, I feel like today was a little bit of a turning point where it was kind of like, okay, we're leaving this spot, we didn't have luck, we only really had one more stop planned, and you're like, start counting the days, and you're like, oh shit, what if we, no.
Right?
I feel like we were all a little bit nervous.
What if we come out of a trip to the Yukon without catching a fish? Mm-hmm. That would be maybe a first, I think,
yeah.
Based on this place and how amazing it is. But anyways, we solved that problem. We did catch the fish. Thank you, Alex, for bringing us to this place.
Tour guide extraordinaire.
Love it.
Yeah, it's a special little spot here, man.
Maybe tell people, have we talked about that? About why we came to this spot?
Just from my past work with the Yukon Government Fisheries and how we conducted a population survey on the grayling in this river for like 2 months.
So you spent 2 months in this spot?
Yeah, shift work. So I'd spend like 5 or 6 days in and then 5 or 6 days out. But we had someone here 24/7.
For two months,
yeah.
Just capturing grayling in the weirs doing what with them exactly?
We were clipping them for DNA and then we were tagging them, actually.
Mm.
That way we could kind of conduct a small mark and recapture at the same time. Like, it was kind of fun to be able to, like, find a group. And then in that group, you could see the tags. They were neon yellow, tiny little things. And so you could count. And then with that, actually, that gave us statistics on that population.
Is there any chance that we would catch fish? Like, how many years ago was this?
2018, I want to say.
So how long do grayling live? Well, my question is there a chance that we would catch a fish that's been tagged?
Yeah, there is a chance, but those tags were kind of designed to, like, fall off after, I think, it's only a year.
Ah.
Mm. I think they wear, like, the plastic that we use on them, actually.
Biodegrades,
and they fall off. So you could, like, if you looked hard, you could maybe find scars because they were all, like, poked in the same spot, but I doubt it.
Hmm.
But we did clip adipose fins. So if you found one with a clipped adipose fin, chances are that was one we surveyed.
Oh, sweet.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Yeah, it would be kind of cool. We'll watch for that tomorrow.
Yeah, that's cool.
Of course, the problem I have is before I can check an adipose fin.
There's one step missing there.
See an adipose fin. Yeah.
Ugh.
Anyways, end to a great day.
Hey everybody, John Schneider here. I don't know if you know this or not, but we are over at YouTube. So if you head over there, you'll be able to search up at Food Afield Podcast. There's all sorts of short videos, some how-to videos, and high production value type stuff. And the other thing, it'd be great if we could kick this Instagram account in the butt. Head over to Instagram. Again, we're at Food Afield Podcast. I know, really original. It is filled with all sorts of behind-the-scenes stuff, a lot of photography, and then, of course, some entertaining short videos as well. So it'd be great if you gave that a follow. And by all means, please tell your friends and family, anybody that might appreciate this type of content. So thanks so much. Enjoy the rest of the episode.
Cool. There's an old beaver lodge or some sunken island out in the river near camp here. It's our favorite spot. And there's a reason for that, because we just fish after fish after fish here.
But Erin is just up around the bank. I can't see her right now, but she was there. And I don't know how many she's caught this morning. Lots. So Alex is catching a bunch too. So up ahead of me here is the bridge. Gravel bar here off this little island, and right in front of me right now, as a matter of fact, I can see grayling lined up. Oh, one just rose. So right now I'm fishing a nymph underneath an indicator, like a dark, like a prince nymph sort of pattern. The main channel is running not too fast, but then there's a seam right along the edge of this back eddy that I'm in. And the fish primarily are hitting along that seam, which is pretty typical, but... Oh, missed them. And so these grayling are just huge compared to Alberta. Like, there's one. Got him. Sweet. I can tell this is a smaller one, but still the smaller one is the biggest one I'd ever catch in Alberta. I'm just fishing them on this little two-weight bamboo. Oh, this is the smallest one I've seen. This is an Alberta size. This would be as big as Alberta gets. Nice, got him in the net. Barbless hooks. So we're allowed to keep two of these each under 16 inches. And so primarily we have been catching them under 16. Just iridescent purple in the midsection going to a dark purple blue. And then of course their dorsal fins are amazing. That was a little female. So back she goes. And that, for me, was fish number, I don't even know, a lot. It is pretty incredible here, this fishery in the Yukon. Just so few people in such a big area, for one thing. Although, it was kind of neat. There's just a subsistence culture here, which is kind of cool. This old fellow pulled up in a half-ton truck and got out with his little spin cast gear and just pulled up to the bridge here beside us and casted two or three times and caught his fish and brought it home and left. And that was the end. He was just interested in some fish for supper. There's another one. There's another one. Little better. Yeah, so they're going... Oh, there's a big male here, Alex.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. It's funny, when you hook onto these smaller ones, especially the females, the males just come whipping over and...
Are you on a prince now, too?
Yep. Yeah. Ish.
Ish, yeah.
Dark. Oh, big male in front of me. Big male. Yeah, nice one in that 16-inch range. That might have been a little male. No, that was a female. I can see her now.
Let's see him now. Are you releasing?
Yeah. Yeah, there's some big males here. It'd be nice to tie into them, but... There's another one. They're stacked in here like cordwood, bud. There's a huge male here. Golly, he's beautiful. Holy crow.
I wonder if the males are just too focused on spawning them.
Yeah. Yep, Yeah, I'm catching some of the smaller ones I've seen come out of here so far.
I'm gonna try a different fly here.
Yeah.
It's big and it's purely black.
Yeah.
Let's see what they think.
This big male has been in the same sort of spot here.
Can you point him out from up from down there?
Yeah, like right in there somewhere. He shows up whenever I hook a female.
Oh yeah, oh yeah.
Do you see him?
I do. He's lingering in that.
Where?
Just drifted back. He's lining up your hook now. Yeah, right there. You basically put your indicator right over his head.
Okay.
He's chilling there behind a bit of a rock. He's even closer to the island now. Oh, nice rise right in front of you.
Yeah.
They're littered in that channel in front of you.
Oh, some lessons were learned there.
What's that?
Multiple lessons were learned there.
What?
Yeah, it's a bit of a tricky spot to cast in.
Don't fish where you can't easily get them out of the water. Test sand and mud look alike. And check that your screws on your reel are tight. Where you're fishing in said location, or your reel will fall off in the middle of a hookup and you'll have to go.
Sweet. Yeah, those sound like great lessons.
Oh my god, that was ridiculous. I'm relieved that wasn't on film. That was like a Mr. Bean or something. I was completely stuck. I fell going down the bank, but I couldn't push myself up because one hand was holding the fish and the other was holding my reel. So I was like this on the bank.
Nice.
That's got to be like an 18, 19 inch male.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I think. Yeah, you just swung over to the log there?
That's right, underneath the tree, basically. Field here.
Just a round piece of foam with a screw top on it that you can unscrew and slide your line through the slot and then tighten it back up. So, yeah, maybe talk to me a bit about that, Alex. How are you catching these grayling?
So, basically, we got our tapered leaders on and followed by about 3 or so feet of tippet, and then we're using, well, it seems to be that the bigger nymphs are actually doing better right now, like size 10, 12 nymphs, and relatively anything dark, it seems like. And then, yeah, we're just casting upstream from, I mean, visible grayling or holes that look like they should hold grayling, and every once in a while, they give us the pleasure of striking. Big dark male roaming around.
He's right tight up against that far bank.
Oh yeah. But even in front, there's quite a few fish there, but they're so uninterested in eating right now.
Yeah.
I think this is the mating hour.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. We sure hit him there for a while, right about from 11 till 12:30 or so. Nice cast, bud. Right up tight against those trees, far undercut bank, and nothing.
Yeah. Interesting. Oh, look at how many fish are over there, too.
Yeah.
Oh, a little greasy. The wind's a worthy opponent of a fly.
Yeah. Going right through them.
Yeah.
They do not care right now.
John, did you tell the listeners what we have for breakfast? Because that was pretty sweet.
Yeah. Yeah, we sort of did a group effort. We had eggs. We had leftover grayling from last night, our fish tacos. And so we made a frittata. What do we have in there? Cheese.
Yeah, and we layered we kind of crusted the bottom with some delicious thick sliced bacon, which was really phenomenal.
So you baked the bacon first, and then we put the eggs on top, and then tomato and cheese.
Onion.
Oh, yeah, you would cook the onion with the bacon as well.
A bit, yeah. Let it sweat on there.
What else was in that? Anything? Salt and pepper.
Yeah.
And the taco seasoning that was on the fish. But man alive, that was good.
Yeah, no, that was really tasty. We were just saying how it was too bad that there wasn't any wild onions, fresh wild onions.
Yeah, nodding onion around. You know what's interesting about being up here, we've talked about it a lot, is just how far behind spring is compared to back home, so. Yeah, that rod lays that line out there nice.
Yeah.
It's not a bad fish right here.
No, a couple smaller males there. Oh, that's in tight. I'm going to hit a tree. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Smoke that branch.
Yeah, you're going for a walk, dude.
What are we having for lunch?
Beer.
Is that right?
Celebratory barley lunch.
I love it. Barley soup.
Barley soup. And, I don't know. Oh, we got lots. We got some flatbreads. We got cheese. I don't know. We'll figure it out.
Something simple, right? Eh?
Hey folks, it's Mark Hall, host of the Hunter Conservationist podcast in Cranbrook, British Columbia. Join co-host Curtis and I as we have nuanced conversations with scientists, First Nation leaders, hunters, trappers, book authors, and biologists about wildlife science, conservation, and responsible hunting in Canada. You can find the Hunter Conservationist podcast wherever you download podcasts.
Okay, so you guys ready for my Sasquatch story? So I'm sleeping in my tent and sound asleep, and all of a sudden it sounded so loud, I heard running. So it was like, and it was really loud, and it was so loud that I actually kind of went like this in my bag because I thought something was going to go through the tent, right? I was asleep, so I wasn't quite thinking right, but whatever, that's the first thought that went through my mind.
And this is this morning.
Yeah, this morning. So it was 5:21, but I only found out afterwards. But anyways, so I hear this running, and then all of a sudden, kashploosh, it was this really loud splashing. Like, it wasn't a beaver slapping its tail. It was like this animal jumping into the water. And my first thought was like Alex running barefoot across the campground, diving into the water. It's like, what is he doing?
I thought he'd get up early. It's
the wild Yukon man.
Yeah, that's exactly what Aaron said. Mm-hmm. Al's gone feral.
After a few days in the woods, he goes feral.
Just can't take it anymore. But I was so tired that I just couldn't be bothered. It didn't come through the tent, so I was fine with whatever it was and whatever it was doing. And so I kind of drift back off to sleep a bit. And then, like, maybe 20 minutes later, I did look at the clock because I wanted to see what time it was, whether to get up or not. But anyways, that's how I knew it was 5:21. So I kind of dozed off back to sleep. And then maybe 20 minutes later, all of a sudden, ka-splash, ka-splash again. And this time I'm like, what is that? It was a heavy animal, right? And then, so I open up, I unzip and I open up the tent and I look out and there's a beaver swimming across the still water. And I went, well, that's weird, but okay. And then all of a sudden from across the road, right where we got firewood, I just hear this sound, this exhale. And it was about five in a row. And it wasn't a deer snorting. It was just a slow exhale through the nose of whatever this animal was. And so, yeah, a bit of a mystery. I don't know what it was. It was, the exhaling was a large animal. Like it was, a horse or a bear or a moose or something. but the water splashing was probably the beaver.
So we had a few theories. Tell them what.
Go ahead.
Okay, so the best we could come up with, obviously, Sasquatch is choice number one. Number two, we were thinking maybe it was a bear hunting the beaver, and like the bear ran through camp, saw the beaver on shore, like launched itself into the water after the beaver, and then was out of breath somewhere on the other side while the beaver was calmly swimming away. So that was our theory when we went out.
It was the working theory when we went to investigate.
So we went to look for tracks.
There was no wet marks crossing the road up there. Like a bear would be dripping wet.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
There was horse tracks along the ditch. So we were like, is he hearing a horse breathe? And it was just unrelated to the beaver.
I'm not sure, man. Kind of sounds like a moose breathing, to be honest with you.
Yeah, right.
But I don't know why a moose would be chasing a beaver. That one's just weird.
Things get weird in the Yukon.
Yeah, I think they were unrelated. I think it was the beaver making the splash, the beaver running down the slope. And when you look, the wet spots that it came up out of the water are right beside the tent, like, what, 6 feet?
Yeah, when we came back, you can see the beaver trail right up onto the bank.
Really? Well, that's a brave beaver.
And so I don't know if anyone knows what a beaver sounds like when it's running on land. So
a spooked beaver? There is no analog for that. You know, maybe I was snoring or something, or I rolled over or something, and then it spooked it and went running down, or I don't know. So
it was coming to check out the Sasquatch that was circling camp.
The Sasquatch was hard asleep in his tent. Yeah. That's the reality. That's interesting. That's why I sleep with earplugs, man.
Yeah.
So the Sasquatch comes to kill you. You don't know. You don't know.
No, just at peace with everything and anything.
Exactly. I hear you.
Is this the official dessert of the 2023 Yukon grailing trip? Banana Schneider.
Tell us what's in it, John.
Bananas, butter, salt, and maple flakes in a skillet over the fire.
Well, we watched
looms. Sorry. Those are looms.
Really? Yeah.
Watching muskrats and loons.
They must be having just a feast in there.
Yeah, no kidding, eh? Yeah, a plate of caramel bananas, eh?
Caramelized banana goodness.
That's quite deadly for how simple it is.
Mm-hmm. Kind of skimped out on the maple flakes, maybe a bit. But
they're great.
Oh, well.
We'll give you one more chance.
All right, Aaron, what did you think about this trip?
Incredible. Like, we've seen such varied landscapes, and we've covered a lot of territory, and, yeah, it's definitely surpassed all of my... I try not to come in with too many expectations anyway. I was just very open to seeing where things would take us and going with the flow. And so, yeah, it's been amazing. It's been lots of laughter, lots of miles, and now lots of fish. What more could you ask for?
It's 10:45, and it's still, you know, just broad daylight.
We're all going to have trouble, I think, getting back on a normal schedule after this.
We were complaining about being hungry, like, it's supper time. And then Aaron says, what time is it? And I'm like, 9 o'clock. Anyways, well, I feel like this is a good way to sort of end this episode, is with our success tonight, you know? Such a wonderful day on such a wonderful trip. And we still have a day and a half left of fishing, or at least a day left of fishing at minimum. Maybe this will just be the end of the episode right here, because I don't think we can top this. We're sitting by a roaring campfire. Our bellies are filled with grayling and some beer, laughter, and good vibes. So
hard to top.
I don't think I can top this. Not at all. Thanks so much, Alex, for hosting Aaron and I. We really appreciate the time you've devoted to showing us around, and
the best.
Really appreciate it.
It's been a blast, man.
It's been a long time coming, 2 years in the making, so I'm glad it ended like this, bud.
Yeah, I'm glad we finally got to do a trip together. That's the biggest thing.
Yeah.
That's been long overdue.
Thank you for listening to the Food Afield podcast. I hope you enjoyed this episode. The Food Afield podcast is created by me, John Schneider. Much of the music that goes into the show is created by my friend Kevin Coswin. And thank you also to Emma for the intro before every episode. And thank you so much to the listeners of the show. We couldn't do this without you. Be sure to head on over to Instagram. You can check out our account there, Food Afield Podcast. There's a lot of behind-the-scenes stories and photographs that go on there. But if you really want the behind-the-scenes stuff, then head on over to the website, foodafieldpodcast.com. Check out the members' benefits. We have member-exclusive articles on the blog that really go behind the scenes and tell stories of the different hunts and different adventures that we're on. We also have recipes there, how-to articles, all sorts of stuff. We really try to make it valuable for our members. Don't forget to leave a review whenever you get a chance on whatever platform you're listening to the show. And thank you so much for sharing the Food Afield podcast with your family and friends.